The couple times that I've been to the Rochester Academy of Medicine to hear your trio play, it's for me one of the most special experiences in a combination of music and the space and the whole experience in this wood-paneled room where you can see the trees through the window. And for me, at least one of them, hearing Mendelssohn piano trios. So tell me a bit about the space and the experience as a player there.
Well, it's the same. It's very salon-like. That's why we call them salon concerts. And I think it's the seating is roughly 100 people. But it's just a beautiful space, and the acoustics are nice. And I used to, when I was younger, I used to hate it when people were sitting very close to me. And I was always worried that my bow would hit somebody or their shoes would like move my music stand around. But actually, I've grown to like it, that close proximity. People really appreciate it. And there's something nice. I mean, people come early just to sit right in the front row there, in the front seats, just to see how I'm doing all of this, or we are doing all of this.
And you've been playing as part of a group there for 20 years now. Can
20
you talk,
years.
Of, talk yes. about it getting started?
Well, 20 years ago, what happened was Sid Sobel, who is a prominent person in the community, he was a friend of mine. And he approached me and said, hey, there is this beautiful space in the Academy of Medicine on East Avenue. Would you be willing to just take a look at it? And I was sort of had this idea of having maybe some chamber music concerts there. So I did. I looked at it and I thought, yeah, that's nice. That would work. And it so happened that at that time, Rebecca Penis, the pianist, and I were discussing to find some kind of venue because we had talked about maybe playing some chamber music together. And we were thinking maybe we can find somebody who lives on East Avenue, for instance, or has a huge living room and where we could maybe play some concerts. That would be ideal because that's sort of what chamber music in general is meant to be, like to be performed in a smaller space. So those two things came together and bingo, we planned one concert. And then the following season's two concerts and then three. And so it grew and before you knew it, we had, it was a regular thing, you know.
Do you feel a certain thing about playing in the same space that you discover different things as you work there?
Yeah, it always, as always with every space, so we rehearse usually in, we always rehearsed in Rebecca Penny's studio, now we rehearse in Misha Koppelman's studio because Rebecca retired from the Eastman School. So then the first time, so on Saturdays, usually we have our dress rehearsal at the Academy. And we always, you always have to get used to it because it's a very different, it sounds very different. Like, you know, like every concert, you have to get used to the space. But it's a very warm sound in there and very resonant, actually, despite the fact that there's not much echo. It's very dry, but at the same time, it's very warm and very vibrant. And that's a wonderful thing for chamber music.
And then, you've mentioned, and I know all of our listeners will be familiar with them, well, with you as a musician, and also then Rebecca Penis and Michal Koppelman, you three have been playing together many different pieces now over many years.
Actually, when we started, it wasn't Misha. When we started, it was Ilya Kahler. Because the next step was when I approached Rebecca about the Academy of Medicine, and she said, hey, that's a good idea. Then, well, who should we play with? A piano trio would be a good thing. And Ilya Kahler had just become the concertmaster of the orchestra, of the RPO. So I asked him, and he was willing to do it, even though he was actually not much of a chamber music player. He was much more of a soloist, unlike Misha Koppelman, of course, who had been a chamber music player all his life. So we started the first few years with Ilya, and then Ilya left, and then that was the time when Misha had just joined the Eastman faculty, and then Rebecca approached him, and so he joined us. And that's already now probably, I don't know, 14, 15 years ago. So,
and that's perhaps talk a little bit about what it is to be a chamber player. You know, I mean, you've done all these things, but to have a specialty or a love for chamber music, for perhaps especially if people don't play as much or they're not from it. What is that? How is that different?
Different from, you mean playing in the orchestra or being a soloist?
I guess a little bit about, like, what are, I mean, I can assume, or people probably assume that being a playing in chamber music involves more listening, more what is, or, well, I guess all of it involves listening.
Yeah. What it's sort of, yeah, you know, well, chamber music is sort of in the middle between orchestra and being a soloist. You know, you get the pleasure of being part of a group and making music that involves lots of colors, more colors than just you are able to just produce by yourself. But at the same time, unlike in an orchestra, you are really a solo player because you are responsible just for your own part. And especially piano trio. Piano trio is really much more of a soloistic type of chamber music form than, for instance, string quartet. String quartet is a little bit more like a choir, where you have to, of course, produce incredibly beautiful playing, and you have to be a virtuoso on instrument, but you also have to blend, you know, because you have to blend into that string sound, which is also what the attraction is of string quartet and what's so beautiful about it. Piano trio is a little different. Each player is sort of on their own, and even though it can blend beautifully, but the fact that you have piano and two strings makes it more interesting because you have more colors, but it also makes it more soloistic in approach.
And that is, the violin is known for getting often lots of solos, but I think composers love to write beautiful melodies for you for the cello.
Oh, absolutely. I'm never complaining. The only thing that sometimes, you know, when you go way into the beginning of the piano trio, like Haydn, you know, who basically invented the piano trio, when you play a Haydn or an early Mozart, then the cello pretty much doubles the left hand of the piano, you know. But then already when you go to, I mean, Mozart already, when you go to the then later Mozarts and then Beethoven, of course, it changes very quickly. And then all the romantics, of course. I mean, we're playing this Mendelssohn D minor and then the Beethoven Archduke. I mean, they're both written totally equally for all three instruments.
And the Archduke is a piece that Beethoven wrote to play with his friends, or at least sort of at the end of his performing career.
And he wrote the piece in 1811, I think, and it was first performed in 1812 or 1813, something like that. And yes, he didn't apparently play too well anymore because some of the people who heard it for the first time said, well, he really isn't what he used to be, which is a little sad. And of course, we all know that by then he was practically almost deaf already. Must have been excruciating for him. But that piece is just, you know, it's actually sort of at the tail end of the middle period, but it really, in character, is already not just foreshadowing, it's already late period. In fact, I find it foreshadowing the Ninth Symphony a little bit, especially the slow movement. The slow movement is just so incredibly beautiful, and it's basically like it's more or less a variation movement. You know, it goes through all these different, just like in the Ninth Symphony, the slow movement. It's just elevating. It's just beautiful.
That point where he is starting to experiment more or think more almost monumentally sort of to the lies beyond.
Yes, and it's always amazing to me how Beethoven was able to write this incredibly beautiful and really uplifting music in the end, totally uplifting music, and he was in such poor shape. You know, he was deaf. I mean, for a musician to be deaf, and he had other health problems, and yet he was able to get over all of this when he wrote music, and it was all optimistic and positive. And then, you know, 10, 11, 12 years later, he wrote the Ninth Symphony, which to this day is like the symbol for optimism. You know, it's just amazing.
And then the Mendelssohn is also a very beautiful piece, and I've heard you play that before. Do you have any just thoughts on playing that or something that people will hear that they should look for, listen for?
The Mendelssohn is, the first thing that comes to my mind is virtuosic. It's a very virtuosic piece for all instruments, especially for the piano. You know, Mendelssohn, similar to Rachmaninoff, is actually, he was a very good pianist, an excellent pianist, just like his sister, by the way.
Yeah.
Fanny Mendelssohn was also, of course, may have even been a better pianist. So when a composer is an excellent pianist, of course, he or she writes very difficult piano parts. And Mendelssohn did that. Also, the other thing is the piano at Mendelssohn's time was a little better than at Beethoven's time, but not that much. So it was still like a fortepiano type piano. And of course, I don't know if you've ever heard a fortepiano, but it's very soft. Mm-hmm. You know, so to get a big sound out of a fortepiano, which Mendelssohn wanted, you had to do a lot of repetitions and a lot of big chords with a lot of notes in it, and he does that. So it's beautiful, of course, and it's shimmering. You have this character of Mendelssohn's shimmering music, glowing. I don't know what else to say. It's just beautiful.
I was about to say that's wonderful for us listening for all that drama and shimmering, and probably a little bit for the arms.
Beautiful melodies, by the way, also just gorgeous melodies. You know, it's interesting. Mendelssohn definitely being one of the masters of gorgeous melodies. Right at the beginning, you know, which is introduced by the cello, gorgeous melody. You know, Beethoven not so much. Beethoven wasn't a great melody writer, but he was a great architect. He knew how to put together big pieces of music with just small motifs, and if you analyze a little bit, it's just amazing what he did. You know, but you don't need to know any of this. It just strikes you as great. You know, so you have two different types of composing there, and they're both great.
And then perhaps this is an obvious question and might not have a simple answer, but you know, you're playing the same program 20 years later, right? Do you have a few thoughts on playing the Beethoven or the Mendelssohn as a musician with 20 more years experience?
It will be different, I'm sure. I can't say yet, but the tempos will probably be different. Usually you say when you get older, the tempos get a little bit slower. But Rebecca, for instance, who has a phenomenal technique, doesn't shy away from very fast tempos. So I'm not necessarily going to say that, because it may not be slower than it was back then. But it's, you know, of course, 20 years makes a huge difference, and we have more experience. So hopefully it'll be an even better performance than 20 years ago.
And are there other memories from the series, favorite pieces you played together, or a story of being part of the Academy? There's just that beautiful experience that happens several times a year in that space.
Well, I mean, gosh, you know, the only thing that comes to mind is time flies when you're having fun. I can't believe it's been 20 years. The Academy of Medicine itself has gone through quite a bit of changes. When we started, it was really still very much an institution that served the medical community. In fact, the first couple of years, almost the entire audience were members of the Academy, and they were doctors and members of the medical community. That has changed dramatically. The Academy of Medicine now, I think, is more of a community service organization that puts together all kinds of events that are interesting and enlightening for the community.
And I think it's wonderful that you're bringing this program or part of it to Hochstein. So even if you aren't in your space, we're getting some of a sense of it, and we can reach also more people. Because as you've said, it's an intimate space, and I think it pretty much sells out. You know, it's full every time you play.
We usually have between 80 and 100. Mm-hmm. I mean, 100 is sort of the capacity, and we usually have close to that, yes.
But Hochstein, you've also performed. This is another place that has a great history in Rochester. You've performed there probably orchestra, solo, chamber,
everything.
Over the years.
Oh, yes. I have played at Hochstein. I remember when I started here, I came here in 1988. And for many years in the beginning, the Hochstein Performance Hall looked like it was like after the war somewhere in Europe. It was really, it was beautiful and it sounded wonderful, but it was in terrible shape. I remember there was a big net hanging from the ceiling because they were worried that some of the ceiling would fall down and hurt people. And there was no stage yet. It used to be a church, of course. There was no stage at all. So we would play at the lowest point in the hall, which was in the front. And they took out some of the pews, and that's where we played orchestra mostly at that point. And then, of course, the stage was built, and then the hall was renovated beautifully. It's my favorite hall in Rochester, I have to say. And even though it's rather large for chamber music, I love to play chamber music in that hall, because there's something, despite its size, it's 900 seats, it's pretty large, it's still, there's something very intimate about it. You know, it's the fact that the audience sits in the round, and you kind of feel like on the stage you're in the middle among the audience. There's something very, very nice. Considering it's a large hall, it's a beautiful hall for chamber music.
And is there anything else you want to add about the upcoming program or musical projects you have coming up? Or?
Well, we are right now discussing dates for next season. And then usually that's the first thing. And then we'll come up with new ideas for programs. The piano trio literature is not as large as the string quartet literature, for instance. But it's probably second to that. So we don't have quite as much to choose from. But there are so many gems, so many beautiful pieces. So we have no qualms about repeating certain pieces relatively often, you know, every few years. Because some of these great pieces, like, for instance, this program we're doing now, you know, you can hear anytime, really. I mean, it's just beautiful stuff.
And I love you've played, yeah, the composers I know better, like Dvorak, but then Arensky, I believe. I'm trying to think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like
Arensky, we did. Yeah, in fact, Arensky, yeah, we recently did this Unknown Pieces program, and Arensky was one of them because it was not the, there's a better known, his first trio is better known, and we played the second trio, which is not very well known. Beautiful piece also, much darker and heavier, but beautiful piece, yeah. Yeah.
I guess this sort of brings us to a close. I realize I didn't ask more. Maybe like if this were a rock band I were talking to, we'd talk about the different personalities of the different Beatles. What are your Beatle-like personalities for the three of you?
Oh, God, personalities. You know, personalities in a chamber group is a very important thing because, you know, when you rehearse together, you play together, especially that long, you have to get along on some level. And of course, like in every group, whether it's rock or classical, tensions develop, you know, that's mm-hmm. normal. Just like in any relationship, you know, marriage comes to mind. So yes, there are tensions, but the nice thing is that we've gotten along so well and we're still doing it. And that speaks for how well we're getting along, you know, and how... And you know, the interesting thing is also the tensions that develop within a group translate into great performances. Because when you perform and there is a feeling, of tension, you know, because you think, oh, my God, you know, she's playing too fast. And what's he doing there? And I thought we were going to start this up. Oh, and so, you know, so there are certain things that happen in the moment and they actually translate into a wonderful performance because it makes it exciting and the audience feels they're really part of something exciting happening at that moment, you know?
That's wonderful to hear. It's that even though you've known each other a long time and there's some comfort, there's still that excitement. Sort of
definitely. The one thing I can say, you know, Misha has played string quartet all his life and he's doing it now still. He was for 20 years the first violinist of the Borodin Quartet, then for 5 years the Tokyo Quartet. Now he has his own quartet, the Koppelmann Quartet. And when you play string quartet, you really have to navigate personalities because string quartets have to rehearse a lot, more than piano trio, because, as I said earlier, of the whole choir blending nature of the group. So he is a master in navigating personalities and in rehearsing and voicing criticism and suggestions in a way that can be heard well and that are helping. And he's one of those people who to have in a group, you can tell it helps the group always to stay together. And you can tell the experience he has. It's not coincidence that he and the personality he has, that he was so long playing string quartets in 20 years in one alone. So that shows you. So he has this wonderful, you know, team spirit that I really admire.
Well, is there anything else that you want to add about the music or program or?
No, I don't think so. We've talked about it and you know, the music will speak very loudly by itself. The only thing that I will notice it for those of you who haven't been at the Academy yet, we usually give a little introduction to each piece, just a few words to make it a little bit more personal. And people usually like that because it makes everything a little more personal and people can enjoy the music a little better when they have a little bit of background for the pieces. So that makes it special. And also then, of course, at the Academy, after the concert, we have a tea reception. And everybody can talk to the musicians and people. It's a nice social gathering, and it's a beautiful space, as you have mentioned. It's just gorgeous. So it's a nice event. And the Hochstein, Live from Hochstein, of course, we can't play the whole program, and we haven't quite decided yet. We have 35 minutes, so we will come up with something before
that would concert. Be good for my heart to know which ones.
Absolutely. We'll let you know.
And that's, not to go on more about the Academy, but that whole combination experience, to me, it's, although I've listened to music all the time, that stands very fondly for me because I met the first Academy concert I came to, I met another young woman who's a librarian at the Irondequoit Public Library. And although we're both so busy, we don't see each other too often, we've remained friends since then. So the experience of hearing Mendelssohn with you playing, with the space, with the tea and cookies, with this friendship I have in my life, all is really all together.
Oh, wonderful. So, that's terrific.
So, Stefan, thanks so much for talking to me. I'm looking forward to the concert.
You're very welcome. It was nice talking with you.